This year is a very interesting phenomenon. Tanis Esther falls on Thursday. Now, in theory, we should fast on Shabbos, the day before Purim. We know we cannot fast on Shabbos. There's a great dispute among the early authorities, when do we fast? Is it Thursday or is it Friday? But if you ask anybody, they'll tell you right away, we fast on Thursday. That's, of course, the accepted custom. Let's read together from the first source. Mis'anem v'yodginu v'adah. V'yamchal Purim v'yachad v'shabbos. Makbimin l'sanos yam chamishi. If Purim is on Sunday, exactly a week from today is Sunday, we fast on the previous Thursday. Fine. So then the Rahagah, the Ramah, tells us that this fast is not as strict as the other fasts that we have in our calendar. The time is there, ain't no chobah. It's not found anywhere really explicitly in the Talmud, that's what we assume. Someone who is not feeling so well, that's true even, let me make a psak over here, for all the quote minor fasts. This is not unique to Tanis Esther. It applies to Shabbos and Batamas, it applies to Asura Batavis, it applies to some Gedalia, a woman who is pregnant or nursing. I'll give another leniency while we're at it. A nursing woman, in my view, for this purpose, is any woman whose child is less than 2 years old. Nursing or not, or the cholish and basakana, someone who is confined to bed or the equivalent. In this situation, there's no need to fast even on the other quote minor fasts. Someone whose eyes hurt, we call that a headache. When your head hurts, means your eyes hurt. Shemitzar and harbe, if they're in somewhat of pain, lo yisano, they shouldn't fast. This is unique. To Tanis Esther. Even individuals who would fast on the other three minor fasts are not on Tanis Esther. V'yifru achar kach. And they'll pay back later on. What do you mean pay back later on? They pay back money. Yep, they pay back a fast. They didn't fast when they were supposed to fast. They pay back later. When is later? Well, perhaps if you look at the next paragraph. Yesh v'sanim gimu yomim zechel Tanis Esther. They're those who actually fast for 3 days, as a commemoration of Tanis Esther, Sumulai Shlosh Yom and Laila V'Yom, we'll read next Sunday, on Purim. So they fast 3 times, kind of a Bahab after Purim, and someone who cannot fast Tanis Esther because of a headache would pay back, presumably, after Purim. Avoshar Brim Lo Yifushim Natsibur. But other healthy people should not stay away from the community, even though this fast has does not have a clear source in the actual Talmud. Here's the whopper. In Purim, Imchal Purim b'Yom Aleph, this year, Purim is on Sunday. Shemis Anav Yom Heshel Lefonos, but you fast Thursday, as we're supposed to fast this Thursday. V'chal Bo Bris Mila, and there's a Bris Mila on that very day. Mutter Lechol Ala Mila. It's permissible for everybody who's invited to the Bris to eat at the Bris. U'lemocha b'Yom Vav Yitz'anu Ha'ochlin. And all those who eat will fast on Friday. Now, if someone asked me in my shul, they have the actual, they're invited to Bris this Thursday. What do they do? What does the caterer do? If the caterer is named Ramah, Israel's caterers, I guess they're Ramah's family caterer, he would have a big spread this Thursday morning. Everyone's fasting. Hey, everyone, run to the Bris. Not so fast, run to the Bris. You run to the Bris, the next day you're fasting. But maybe, these days, Bris can have, French toast and omelets and all kinds of goodies. Maybe it's worth it. So I said, Rabbi, by a show of hands, has anyone in his or her life ever been in such a situation where you came to a bris on Tanis Esther on a Thursday, which happens every few years, and they actually served a meal? Who's ever been there? And strange. You think you would have some personal experience in this respect. So let's take a look in the Mishnah Berurah. This is, we'll start with Oz Zion, which is the last of this segment. Hainukola Anoshim Akru Nasuda. I feel Yosame Asarakil Bishakus Maturam Lechel. Ochan Kulam Trichel Nasana Samachu Kilakamet. You have to eat on Thursday, fast on Friday. For Ayin Bittaz Eli Rabbah Shachogan Agazu. They argue with this Rama. For Datam, their opinion is, the Kviyusa de Tanisa Udavka Liyomhe, that the Kviyus, the establishment of the determination of the fast, is only on Thursday. Vakein Asurim Kulam Lecho Biyomhe, Yasu Hasuda Balayla. And the Suda would be Thursday night. Hence, this seems to be the custom of most practical authorities nowadays, to go against the Ramah. Yes, that's true. Against the Ramah. And if there's a bris this Thursday, maybe you'll get an invitation. Don't expect breakfast. You'll say, what happened? I have a Ramah. They'll say, well, we have a Mishnah Berurah. Cheap, huh? Not cheap. You have to sell your flesh for supper. It's more expensive. But it involves maybe a second trip, Thursday night. So this is the custom that we have following the Taz against the Ramah, and the Aruch HaShulchan says so explicitly. So this is therefore our custom. Fine. Is this relevant to anything beyond this somewhat rare occurrence of a bris taking place this coming Thursday? I believe the answer to this question is yes. What is the fundamental dispute between these two positions? The Mishnah Berurah articulates it so beautifully and says, in explaining the second view, the Kviyusa de Tanisa Udavka Liyomhe, that the day of the fast is only on Thursday. What does that mean? That means the Ramah disagrees. The Ramah says you can fast Thursday or Friday. Why Thursday or Friday? Well, look, it's the wrong day. The right day would be Shabbos. So you can fast Thursday or Friday. They're both exactly the same. The Ravens says you should always fast on Friday, even with or without a bris. That'd be one way to understand this words of the Mishnah Berurah, and on a simple level, that's exactly what he's saying. However, we can take it a step further. If one looks in the, unfortunately, these sources were unable to print out for us the footnotes of the Mishnah Berurah. They're called the Shaar HaTzion, because of the particular program that was being used in the yeshiva, does not have the footnotes as the Shaar HaTzion in its database. So it's missing. I'll read you just a brief word from the actual footnote, which is called the Shaar HaTzion, written by the Mishnah Berurah himself in explaining this particular position, why we do not accept this Ramah. And he tells us that Tanis Esther really is one of those fast days that can even be observed after Purim. As we saw, someone who has a headache, although you would fast Asar B'Tavis, you would fast Shabbat B'Tavis and Sambadaya, but not on Tanis Esther. You know why not? You have an opportunity to repay. And the fact that you have an opportunity to repay, this itself allows us to take it on credit, not to fast the day of Tanis Esther proper, but rather to postpone the fast until some other day after Purim, which is actually recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. Yesh mis'anem gimel yom zecher l'Tanis Esther. However, this leads to an interesting conclusion. What if, in fact, we reject this entire position? We maintain that the Tavius of the Tanis is set for one particular day. What is that day? In a typical year, it's the 13th day of Adar. No exceptions. I don't care, headache or no headaches. And in this kind of a year, it's the 11th day of Adar, which is the Thursday preceding Purim. If I am right, then an individual who has a headache, in point of fact, as long as the headache is not serious enough, that would warrant his not fasting on Shavuos and Matzavos, for example, then you should fast, even on Tanis Esther. Against the Ramah, a second time. The Ramah says, if it's a bris this Thursday, you don't fast Thursday, you fast Friday. What does that mean? It means the fast is fluid. It's a fast somewhere in the month of Adar. Thursday's bad, it's a bris, we'll fast Friday. But if we reject that, why? As we read just a minute ago, the Kviyus of the Tanis Udafko Liyomhe, that means in a typical year, whatever it may be, the Kviyus is only that one particular day, then in point of fact, you are not permitted to break your fast if you have a headache. To the contrary, you have to tough it out. Again, unless you qualify as what we call a Chole She'en Bo Sakana. If you're a Chole She'en Bo Sakana, then, of course, you may break your fast on Tanis Esther, just as you may break your fast on Shavuos and Matzavos, Asar B'Tavis, and Song Gedalia. So it appears. Remarkable. This is a very, very interesting halakha. And again, in explaining why someone with a headache is not fast, the Sharati in the footnote, you'll look it up later, the Yud Aleph says, it's not kavu on this day. They get 3 days after Purim. So therefore, for we who have kavuyos at the time on that day, well, someone with a headache should actually fast on that day. Now let me tell you two personal stories. It's hard to remember a shiur. You have a personal story that makes it much easier to remember. I have a son. My son, thank God, is our Rebbe in our yeshiva, and his name is Yehuda. Yehuda's birthday is Friday, the 12th day of Adar. Yehuda's bar mitzvah was a year like this, X number of years ago, and this is his bar mitzvah drush. Everyone got together Thursday night after the fast for a large Reisha Kasuda in Riverdale. And he started his drasha as follows. Everyone has just gone through this fast, has completed the fast, and everyone's now looking forward to a Suda tonight, and tomorrow's no problem. I face the horrifying prospect of having to fast tomorrow on the day of my bar mitzvah. Some of you read that on it. And what was it based upon? This Ramah. Because the Ramah said that you can't fast on Thursday, because the bris you fast on Friday. So Yehuda said, even if I did fast on Thursday, it doesn't count. Because it wasn't my mitzvah yet. I'm only my mitzvah tonight. So I have to fast on Friday. Whoa. Everyone was listening carefully, riveted in their seats. Well, this pull of it was the start of his life as a mature Jewish adult with a fast day. But no one else was fasting. His conclusion was that arguably, according to the Ramah, he should be fasting. But since we don't follow the Ramah, he doesn't have to. That was the bottom line. A personal story. And this personal story, for those who want to see it in print, I'll just give you a little commercial, if you will. A new sefer came out just a few weeks ago, which I put out in memory of the first yartz of my father-in-law, Zichrono Livracha. It's called Am Mordechai on Seder Moed. And I have a piece here, it's called Simen Chalvov, and there you'll find this story. And the other story I'm telling you, the first one that's coming here, is on the same page Kuf Yud. What happens if Tanis Esther is not brought up earlier, but Tanis Esther on a regular day, which means, let's say a Monday. Purim is often on Tuesday. You have Tainus Esther on a Monday. So what's it then? So look in the Mishnah Brura Zion, the last half we didn't see it. Let's say they have a Tainus Esther this week on Thursday. So everyone has to fast, he says. Okay, now Baal Bris the Atman. Who's the Baal Bris? The father, the Sandik, and the Moel. Mutarim Lechol Biyom Heach Amila. They can eat on Thursday. They ain't sorrowful with Sanos Lamocha. Precisely because the fast is Kavua, they need not fast on Friday. Where do you see this? Ukanal Toskus Nuntes Linyan Tisha B'Av. Tisha, what's Tisha B'Av? If Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbat, when do we fast? Sunday. What if you have a bris that day on Sunday? Has anyone ever been in such a bris? Which is born on the 10th day of Av, which is a Sunday. No one's ever been in such a bris. Well, if you've been there, everyone fasts. Maybe you see some witch that after Mincha, those three people go off into a side room and they have to have lunch. It's a dinner Shulchan Aruch. What happens on Tanis Esther, which is not moved from its original date? Monday. Purim is Tuesday. Tanis Esther falls out on Monday. You're making a bris that day. So had it been Tisha B'Av, Shivat B'Tamuz, Tzom Gedalia, Atzeret B'Teves, you'd have to fast. Even if you're the father, you're the tzaddik, you're the merl, you have to fast. Why? It wasn't pushed. Only if it's pushed to Sunday, a special leniency. Well, what about Esther? What about Tanis Esther? What do you do? It's a serious, serious question. And I had the same question in my own family. I have a son, Simcha, whose birthday was Shabbos, born the sixth day of Adar, Brit on the 13th of Adar, on a Monday. What do you do? What's the question? There are some who claim that the three people, the Tzaddik, the Merle, and the father, have Yomtzus Shalahem, they're Yomtzus, and they break the fast. Even though the other fast they would not break if it wasn't pushed off or earlier. But here, it's different. Why is it different? Let me explain to you why it's different. The other fast days are days of mourning. And it's an expression that my personal joy cannot push aside the mourning of the community. And therefore I'm required to fast. Only if it's the Stone Soul Sunday, my Rebbe used to explain, it's the Stone Soul Sunday, it's not a day of mourning. The 10th of Av, or the 18th of Tammuz, or the 4th of Tishrei, those are not days of mourning. We have to fast because we weren't able to fast on Shabbos. But the day is not a red letter day on the calendar, it's a day of mourning. Hence, your private Yom Tov can be superimposed on this day, allowing you to eat, as opposed to a national day of mourning, which your private holiday cannot take effect upon. But that being the case, a time of death is not a fast day of mourning. Nothing to do with mourning. No avelus. It commemorates our victory in the military scene on the 13th of other of that year, or perhaps it commemorates the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu fasted and the Jews fasted, whatever it may be, but it's not mourning, it's not avelus. So therefore, according to certain authorities, you may actually eat on that day. As a matter of fact, this is relevant to another family story. I have a daughter. She got married on the ninth day of Adar, some years ago. And therefore, her Sheva Brachos coincided with, yes, you guessed it, Tanis Esther, which was not pushed. That year, Purim, I believe, was on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. And Thursday was Tanis Esther. Should she fast? Should her husband fast? So the Shari Tshuva and the Shari Tzion, again, both off your page, I'm sorry due to the technical difficulties, discuss this issue. And according to many authorities, they say, someone who's making a bris, or someone who got married that week, should not be fasting. Because their private holiday can take effect, again, because it's not a day of national mourning, even though it's a day of national fasting, and they should not fast. And others disagree. So when I was confronted with this question on a practical level, simple was born, I didn't know what to do. I said to myself, I need to eat. Baruch Hashem, we eat so much during the week, I get to do without it. Then I opened the tshuva of Rav Avadia Yosef. Rav Avadia Paskin, you're not allowed to fast. You must eat, because it's yonder for you. So now, what do you do? So I said, Rav Avadia says, I have to eat. I have no choice. So I called the tzaddik to my house after mincha. We had a suda. My wife also ate. She was the oledah. She turned about to eat. I discovered later that Rav Moshe Feinstein Paskin, you're not allowed to eat. So Rav Avadia says you must eat, and Rav Moshe says you may not eat. Now, what does a good Jew do when he's caught between the rock and the hard place? I won't answer that question. But whatever you do, you're doing the right thing, because you found Gedolei Hador. Isn't that fascinating how all these shadows came up in my own family? So I told my daughter and son that you can eat. Even though I knew about Rav Moshe by that time, since the Chosn Kala, they're allowed to eat, which seems to be the majority view of the recent Acharon. This therefore concludes the first part of today's shir, which is focused upon not actually Purim proper, but rather upon the prelude to Purim, which is Tanis Esther. And now we start part two of the shir. The Megillah itself. I have a major problem, and I saw certain authorities on the modern scene have an effect possibly, believe it or not, and they have their own say so explicitly, but that's what emerges from their analysis. I'm sorry to say that except for the Balkari, basically nobody fulfills the mitzvah of Megillah. That's a shocking statement. A shocking statement. but it really emerges from their analysis. Let me explain to you why. Again, off the page, you'll find a rush in Simon, in the Torah Simon Nun test, it's the Shuvah Sar Rush, where he says like this, that ideally, we should all fulfill the Krishma, the Birchas Krishma, by listening to the Chazan with total silence. The reason I don't do it, says the Rush, I'm afraid I'm going to become distracted. I'm not going to be focused and pay attention to what is going on, and in that way I will not fulfill the mitzvah. So that's the Rush and the Torah quote in the Simon Nun test and Arachai. This being the case, it's probably true of almost every single listener to the Megillah. It's a long reading. It takes a long time. It's hard to imagine that a person is listening during the entire Megillah and isn't distracted for even 1 minute, for 1 second, for one word. Because if you're distracted for as much as one word, you're not paying attention, according to this understanding, you will not have fulfilled the mitzvah. And that's why I saw quoted a number of recent sources. And I, the defender of Klal Yisrael, how can you accept this? Nobody fulfills the mitzvah of the Megillah. It's just mind-boggling. But what do? They quote chapter and verse. They quote a rush and says so explicitly. And that's our meaning when it comes to Birchas Krishma. No one listens to the Chazan. We all do it ourselves. So I'd like to bring a counterproof from a Talmudic statement. The first source of the second group. Haloel Sheshama Tamegillah Haksuva Veloshan HaKodesh from the Kisri HaKodesh Afal Pishin Yodeh Mahim Omrim Yotze Yodeh Chovah. A person who does not understand Hebrew and he hears the Megillah read in Hebrew from a proper text, even has no idea what is going on, he still fulfills the mitzvah. Mishnah Berurah Chovah. V'achashtronim b'nei ha'amochim Gamanam Yadina Nahu. There's certain ones we don't know what they are. You look at Oslo, they give some kind of a remarkable translation. Some kinds of horsemen with special kinds of horses. We don't really understand what it really means. So therefore, Elo Beina Elamitis Kriya Prisumenisa. Rafila the Khathila Nami. And therefore you don't have to know what every word means. What must you do? You must hear every word. You must hear every word. So the prima donna says the Yerei Shemayim of the Megillah Kshera, and to read everyone along in a whisper, because in Epshar the Shema Ben Hashat Hakol Kin every word, Uvifrat Shanaorim Mivalbelim. If they bang Haman, when they bang Haman, you miss a word. Nayotze, look at the last one, Samach. So Achazon Lishtok Oz B'Shal Shemaki when they bang Haman, they Sheyishmu Kulam Kriyata. Oh, I don't have a kosher meal, I use the ox, that's what I use. I use the ox meal. Why? To turn the most pages. So you keep focused, you keep trying to turn pages, and nice pictures there. I use the art school youth Megillah. I stay right next to the Batari, and in case he makes a mistake, I correct him. From the art school youth Megillah. It's not the regular one, youth. I try to stay young. But still, yeah, I don't miss any words. I'm not on top of it. That thing is a homo with a pause there. Homo. After the ma, that's on. So you don't hear him. So what do you do if you don't hear him? You're not Yotze, unfortunately. So you should read the word Haman just quietly from your, I'm not advertising, any Megillah you have, any Chumash up in front of you, whatever it may be, just read the word Haman if you can't hear it from the bell cover. So that's the Mishnah Berurah. And he quotes again, it's better to have a kosher Megillah, which most of us don't have and perhaps can't even read from, we don't have the dots, etc., etc. Okay, that's fine. But what about an individual who's not focused? He's just not focused. Is he fulfilled the mitzvah at first glance? The answer to that question is no. Same as the Rosh said with respect to Birchas Kriyishma. That's the problem. So, I may want to suggest the following. Megillah is different than all other mitzvahs. According to the opinion of the Rosh, based on Tosfos, and the Rosh himself says it not only in his Tshuva, but he says it on the Sefer Brachos as well, if you say something you don't understand it, you fulfill the mitzvah.
If you hear something and don't understand, whether it be benching, whether it be kiddush, according to the Rosh, you do not fulfill the mitzvah. That's a problem when it comes to kiddush too. Because you have to understand it, if you lose focus, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. Because at that moment, you're not understanding anything. You're thinking about fill in the blank. Stop. Sports. I'll stop there. Whatever you're thinking about. At that moment in your time, your brain is not processing the translation of the word. You don't fulfill the mitzvah. When it comes to Megillah, when you do not have to understand, because it's a unique kind of a din, none of us understand that Hashanah and Ramachim, then I'm suggesting even the Rosh would concede that you do fulfill the mitzvah as long as you hear every word, even though you're not focused. And this is an interesting sidebar. If you look in the second source, Kra Misnamne. What does Misnamne mean? Dozing. Horvel on Nirdan Bishena Yotza. The Valkyrie is dozing. Okay. Avalim Shmo Misnamne. If you heard it while you're dozing, Lo Yotza. Na Yotza. So my first response was, this is bad news. It indicates that if you're dozing and you aren't focused while you're dozing, you don't fulfill the mitzvah, even though we're talking about the Megillah, which you need to understand. So I got very, very worried. Very worried. However, I believe the right answer is as follows. Look at Mem Aleph, next to last on Mishnah Berurah. The decree, okay, Mishakori, Karoyari, Mukham, Sharami, Anab, Shaylam, Ashapur. As long as you're awake, even though you're dozing, you say the right words. Mashenge Bishmiya. There's some words missing. What does missing mean? If missing means you don't understand because you're half asleep, that's bad news for the Jews. We can be awake and miss the words because we're in dreamland. But I call the sleep doctor. There are sleep doctors, you know, for people who can't sleep well. I had one in my shul. He moved out. I called him. He was living in Florida. I said, what happens when you're in a state of dozing? What really happens? So the idea of nim velo nim, tir velo tir, as the Gemara puts it, it means he's looking on the test, the koral avion, he say chayim, he'll answer. But velo yadar aduay stroyat, on a logical point, he won't know. But the chimitka limitka, you're reminded afterwards what happened, but remember. So how can that be? So the doctor explained it to me. You're literally in and out of sleep. That's the Gemara's explicit. Tear below tear, nim below nim. You're literally awake and not awake, and asleep and not asleep. So your auditory nerve that works when you're awake and is sort of tuned off when you're asleep is working. It's working when you're awake and not when you're asleep. Therefore, it misses certain words. You don't even hear them. So then the question becomes, so why do you answer to your name? The sleep is so shallow. That the minute someone says Chaim, Chana, right away, you wake up and you hear it. And how can you recreate the shiur if you're half asleep? The answer is you're half awake. And so you can put it, you piece it together. Your brain works. You rewire it to figure it out. That's why you're also fulfilled the mitzvah, because you're literally asleep for a part of the time. But a person's wide awake, just thinking about the ball games and about the business. And in this nature, in my view, he does fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah, even according to the opinion of the Rosh, because Megillah is unique. What do you do with Kiddush? In many homes, one person makes Kiddush, and someone else is just not focused, thinking about the that soup, that delicious challah that you smell, you're not thinking about the Kiddush. That's a bigger problem, because there, according to the Rosh, I believe you would in fact not fulfill the mitzvah by hearing it as opposed to saying it. Well, the truth is, not going into it right now, it's very possible we don't follow the Rosh in the first place. Even by benching, where they're arguing, we probably follow Rashi. And Rashi is of the opinion that, even with respect to other mitzvahs, as long as you hear it, even if you don't understand anything, you do fulfill the mitzvah. So therefore, this concludes part two of the Shia. Part two of the Shia is about the topic that pertains to all of us, not merely a tiny Esther question, which is originally only relevant to this year for a bris, and we explain its relevance to everybody in a certain way, in certain specific circumstances, how he viewed time could be relevant to you, for your headache, if you have a headache. But the second part applies to everybody but the Balkoi, and my bottom line is that it's okay, contrary to what is printed in many recent Svarim, that you're sort of daydreaming, you're not Yotze at all, and my view, which I try to demonstrate, is that you would be Yotze the Mitzvah as long as you're awake. If you fall asleep, it's over. Maybe it takes you to stand up or to, you know, do something about it to keep yourself awake. This year it's mostly Shabbos. We're not supposed to say it explicitly, but if you take a nice nap on Shabbos, it keeps you awake for the Megillah, it certainly would be something appropriate. Okay. Part 3 of today's shiur, second page of the source sheet. Chayav kol adam vitim lefachot shtei matanos lishnei aniyim. A person is required to give at least 2 gifts to 2 poor people. Very, very important. 2 gifts to 2 poor people. Who has to give? Says the Mishnah Berurah Aleph. Bein ish u bein isha. Men and women alike have to give 2 gifts to 2 poor people. How big must the gift be? Beis. The prima donna says, I don't know how much it should be. The Ritva says, 2 prutas. That's pretty cheap. A prutas is probably more than a penny now. The price of silver has gone up. 2 nickels should certainly do it. That's a pretty cheap way of fulfilling the core mitzvah of Matanos L'Avyon. But the Chatzchila, writes the Mishnah Berurah, the last line of that paragraph base, V'tein le'evyon dover haroi le'honos mimenu b'purim, machal omol sh'yuchal l'hosi b'purim. Enough for a meal. How much does a meal cost on Purim? Or what does a meal of Purim consist of? I think it has 3 core elements. Bread, with the many jars you have to wash, and everyone agrees. Meat, also a dispute. And everyone agrees, what? Wine. So what does it cost to buy a slice of bread? That's the kazayis. And a slice of salami, I guess. That's called meat. And a cup of wine. It depends if you're buying them wholesale or retail. If you go to a restaurant, it's worth your fortune. Because you're going to buy, you know, a pound of rye and divide it 16 ways, and a bottle of wine and divide it that many ways, and a whole salami and slice it that many ways, it's going to be pretty cheap. $1? I think you can get away with it for $1 if you just slice it up, the minimum shear. Okay, we went up from a penny, or 2 cents, to $1. That's a 50 times as much. Okay, again, sort of a minimum to give to 2 people on Purim. Now, when should this money be given? Says the Bir Halacha, which you see in the Shnei Aniyim, V'lo yiten lem kodem Purim, Dilma achvelu kodem Purim. Don't give them the money before Purim. They may eat up the money with the food, they'll spend it before Purim. Says the Mishnah Berurah, the Halacha, minig ha'olam v'itein kodem Purim. The minig is to give it earlier. After matanos avyonim mitzvot adapka v'yom Purim. Tarach lomar, yakochok nosein shtei matanos avyonim gam v'yom Purim. V'gam yesh harbe aniyim achosim al apsochim v'purim. Many people come to the house on Purim, not only in Lawrence Theaters, but even in Radin. I know it was a small town, they could fit the whole town into one block here. Even there, apparently, there were people coming to the Chavos Chaim's house on Purim. By the way, Purim means Purim Day. Purim Day. Once again, the mitzvahs are to be done by day. Here's the bottom line. Yes, you should fulfill the mitzvah on Purim Day. When people come to your house or find someone. But what we do in advance, whether it be Purim night or even and this whole week, we give to the various funds that are supporting poor individuals here in Eretz Yisrael. This is all included in the mitzvah of Matanos La'Evyonim. Now, if you turn to the next page, we have additional sources. This page talks about a comparison between Matanos Evyonim and what we call Shalach Malas, Mishloach Malas. And the Aruch HaShulchan discusses two important things. On the fourth line of the longer paragraph, the Aroli. No. Sixth line. The Chaya leads in Dafka Bepurim Atzma, before Purim, even if you gave it for Purim, Ein Amol, the Zelchobot, Hayom. The line starts the word Hayom. Dafka. Poshatu, the Ein Sarat leads in the Atzma, I'm just to give it myself on Purim. The Yachal leads in Gamayade Shaliach. I can appoint a messenger. The Yachal Lahamid Shaliach Kodem Purim, Shiit and Bishvila Bepurim Atzma Savyon. So we all do. We appoint agents to give the money out on Purim proper. Uve mitzvah zu gam noshim chayavos. Zechol mitzvah Purim chayavos noshim ka anoshim. Men and women alike. V'yayroli, it seems to me, the ish v'ishto shneem yotzim v'shtei matonos. The kaguf echorein. Look at that. That a husband and wife are one team. And therefore sufficient that together they give two gifts to two poor people. If you have a joint account, and you write a check, that check counts for both. Hopefully the check will be more than $4. If you want to view it as being separate, it will be sufficient funds for both. A very important idea. Very important. Just as we find with Matanos of Yonim, you should give the money on Purim, ideally. I'm not convinced that even if you give it to a shliach, and you appoint them before Purim, you fulfilled it in the ideal sense. Sure, technically speaking, you did it. But look at the last Aruch HaShulchan. The Yesh Tishtapet, Kishasholach Monos Re'eyu Shebemerchakim Kodem Purim. The Agil of the Purim. You send it by mail, FedEx, however it gets there on Sunday. It's tough to get there on Sunday, but let's say you figure out a way how to do it. Im Yotza Bezeyedei Mishloach Monos. The Yesh Misha'o Mashayotza. If I gave it to a friend, I need a friend today, here, take a bag and give it to Reuven next Sunday on Purim. V'linim et lo yotza. No good. Why not? The be'ina mishloach monos for Purim atzmo. So what? He's giving it on Purim. The ode, this is critical. The ha'ika mishloach monos havi mishum simcha. The eza simcha yilo ata mashasholach mikodem. If I wasn't involved myself on Purim, I don't experience that joy, that high of joy. But if that's the case, then I should give it to the person from my hand to his hand on Purim, with respect to Matanos, with respect to Mishloach Matanos. And if that's the case, if a shliach is no good with respect to Shalach Matanos, my view is it should be no good with respect to Matanos of Yonim as well. So I'm going to save that to the very last part of the shiur. Now I'm going to go back to what I'll call part four before the actual conclusion. Let's go back to the previous page. Shulchan Aruch says, Mitzvah laharbot v'sudas purim, u'v'suda achas yotzin. Okay? If you fulfill the mitzvah with one meal, when is the meal? So the Purim she'asah balayla layasah, not at night, has to be by day. Okay? By day. The day begins with dawn and ends with the sunset. Fine. Next bit. Chayav inish l'bisumei b'puriyah. A person should drink on Purim. Ad layada ben or homo l'baruch Mordechai. Don't. No one is allowed to leave now. Now you can't leave. Ramon. V'yesh omrim. The ein tzorich lishtaker kol kach. Don't get so drunk. Ela sheyishte yosem milimudo. You drink more than usual. I hope for us, as anything. Whatever we drink is more than usual, I hope. V'yashem. And you fall asleep. We know that alcohol can put you to sleep. U'mitom sheyashem. Did you fall asleep? Eine odea ben or homo lebaruch Mordechai. While you're sleeping, you have no clue. Homo, you know, you're sleeping. Echad amaba v'echad amamit u'mivad shichav en libo l'ashamayim. That's what it says. Oshayim Mishavura, V'chein Ro'oi La'asos. The appropriate way to fulfill Adlayoda today is by going to sleep. Is by going to sleep. This is the way how we do it. By going to sleep. Fine. By going to sleep. Skipping a few lines. The Noagim Lato Sudas Purim La'achar Mincha. The last line. The Arvit is Spalu Balayla. Of course, on the Marv at night. Umispalu Mincha Tchila Borayam Godo. The majority of the meal should be by day. That's a very strange definition. If I eat by day, so my fulfillment is in suspended animation. If I eat more at night, I will retroactively have eaten the majority at night, and I didn't fulfill the mitzvah, I don't believe it. My view of the majority means the essentials. What I said, the essentials, a slice of bread, and a slice of meat, and a cup of wine. As long as that's done before the sunset, you fulfill the mitzvah no matter how much you eat after. That's my understanding of the Shema, although it's not explicitly in the words. So now I have a major, major problem. Now, it is true that the Rama tells us some important things about the Suda's Purim. She akabet the Ostes Mishtabura. Anshe Beso Vechaveyov. What does that mean? Should you rejoice with your family? It's a pasuk in the Megillah. Yes. Mishpacha, mishpacha. Look in Rashi and the Megillah says, he'll tell you that the family should come together for the Suda's Purim. Shouldn't be done solo. I have a major, major question, which is as follows. These two Ramos contradict each other. The contradiction is the two Ramos. First Ramos says, we have fulfilled the mitzvah by falling asleep. Not just sleeping. Sleeping under the influence. After the wine, the alcohol. Then the Rambam says that the meal starts by day, but goes into the night. So when do you fall asleep? If you fall asleep at night, in my view, doesn't help. Because you were not adloyodaying until after Purim is over. You have to fall asleep by day. So you fall asleep by day, when? Before the meal, you didn't drink. At the meal, I mean, you can fall asleep at the meal itself. I've had talmidim like that. So they drank too much. I no one counts me to do this for them. I don't give them enough to drink. I'm a very thick stickler. I give them a cup of wine and I measure it out, and that's it. There was other rebbeim now from bigger crowds in Peru. Whatever, not for now. So the question is: these are more than contradictory. So this is my answer to this question, and it's perhaps a little bit difficult to fulfill. This is what I try to do. There were two separate and distinct obligations in the Megillah. One is called Nishta, and one is called Simcha. Simcha is common to other holidays as well. And the Rambam says with respect to other holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, should have meat and wine. Purim is no less. Purim has an additional obligation. It's called Nishta. A separate obligation to drink wine to become intoxicated. By the way, as an aside, there's no mitzvah to drink anything other than wine. Beer and alcohol, whiskey are prohibited. I use the word prohibited. On Purim as any other day of the year. And in my view, it's really the prohibition. I've seen too much happen when people drink. Starting from Noah until now. It's a cup of wine. That's Mishnah. For us, a cup suffices. What do we usually drink? Not trans. What I do on Purim is I come home from the Megillah, and for breakfast, very out of character, I drink wine. Then I go into my room and try to fall asleep. It's usually not too hard, because I'm up so late the night before with the chagigas and everything like that, that it's usually I'm pretty tired, and I fall asleep. You fall asleep for 1 second. You already have the Adla Yoda, you fulfilled Mishnah. Come to the Suda many hours later, almost before, just before it gets dark, and I fulfill Simcha. What's that? Bread, meat, another cup of wine. All right, so we have two cups of wine. One for the Mishnah, and one for the Simcha. And there's no need to fall asleep after the second cup, because that's not the Chiyuv of Mishnah. That's Adla Yoda only for the first cup. That's how I fulfill my Purim responsibilities and obligations, and I recommend. I usually am very laid back. You don't do what I do whatever you want. Not here. Here I'm saying, follow the Mishnah Berurah. The chain roy lato. Adla Yada should be fulfilled with one cup of wine, followed by a little bit of a nap, and not with the literal sense of becoming intoxicated. It's simply the wrong way to fulfill the mitzvah, given the reality of today's world. I have to conclude this year with the words of the Rambam on the last page on top. We've spoken just now about Shalach Manas and Matanas of Yonah. First, there's a choice after the bare minimum. Let's review again. Bare minimum of Matanas of Yonah, we said a dollar, it's the minimum. Something even 2 cents. Let's say a dollar, enough for him to enjoy his Purim meal. $5 each guy, for $10. For sure, he can fulfill the mitzvah of Matanas of Yonah on the basic level. And Shalach Manas is even easier. You take an orange and an apple, and you give it to, let's be healthy, and give it to your friend, fulfill the mitzvah. Okay? But now I want to go beyond the minimum. I want to give more than I absolutely are required to do. But my funds are somewhat limited. Should I go more in the Matanos of Yonim, or should I go more on the Shalach Manos? The Rambam addresses this question. Let's read it together. Mutav la'odom la'harbos the Matanos of Yonim, Milaharbos Bisudaso Vishloch Monasareyas. Better to give more to the poor and to eat more yourself and to give more food to your friends. Why? She'ein Sham Simcha Gedola Umufaora. There does not exist a greater or more splendid Simcha. Ella Mitsameach Leib Anim Viasomim Valmonos Vigeris. But to gladden the heart of the poor, the orphan, the widow, and the stranger. Shemesameach leiv ha'omlolim ha'elu, one who gladdens the hearts of these unfortunates. Dom elishchina, what a remarkable statement, is comparable to God Himself. Shenema, as it says, lahachios ruach shefolim, ulahachios leiv nidkoim. Hashem revives the spirit of the lowly and revives the heart of the crushed. What is this Rambam telling us? First, it tells us that the simcha we experience when it comes to Shalach Manos and Sudas Purim is not the simcha of the recipient, but the simcha of the giver. That's the last Aruch HaShulchan. They should do it on Purim itself so you can experience the simcha yourself. How much more so is it important to actually give the money to a poor person on Purim, over and above that you're making agents to give charity and to give Shalach Manos, do it yourself on the day of Purim. But what does it mean, Gedola, and what does it mean, Mufaora? My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, used to teach us every word in the Rambam is gold. Every single word conveys a meaning. Perhaps the dichotomy here is the representation of the quantitative and the qualitative. Gedola is quantitative, and Mufaora is qualitative. Let me explain. When a person eats and drinks himself, it is quantitatively limited. You go into a steakhouse, all you can eat for X dollars. And they go broke. No, they can't. They notice after a while you just can't take it down. Khalil, you go past that. Go the other way. So there's a limit. Because your stomach is physical, it's limited by a body. There's only X amount you can eat and drink. That's it. Contrast this with helping others. That has no limits. That's a simcha gedola, a quantitative that can do more and more and more and more. No limits. But it's also mifo'ora. It's splendid. Yes, we are required to enjoy ourselves on Purim and on Pesach and to have delicious food. It's a joy. It's hard to call it splendid. We may call the cake splendid, maybe the meat splendid, but let's be real. It's really a splendid simcha. A nice simcha. A splendid simcha, qualitatively, is helping somebody else. The two phrases they use, gedola and mefo'ora. Why must the Rambam add those words? Doma v'shchina. It's like God, God-like. Here's the answer. The reason why our physical joy is limited is because we are physical beings. And as such, as physical beings, or by definition, limited by the capacity of our physical body. God is infinite. God is a spiritual being. There's no, absolutely infinite. The amount of joy that God can experience is infinite. Oh, the chedva b'mkomo. Unlimited joy exists in God's presence. Well, guess what? The human soul is called by the rabbis a chelek elokami ma'am, a portion of the heavenly God. And when I took studied math a long time ago, they taught us that the smallest fraction of infinity is infinity. So our souls are also infinite. Pasuk in Kohelet, ha-nefesh lo timole. The soul can never be satiated. Never. And therefore, the joy of the soul can never be limited. That's why the Ramah to teach us that helping somebody else, your doma l'shchina, as God revives the spirit of the crushed and the heart of the lowly and the heart of the crushed, so we are able to do the same thing by helping out other people. And therefore, if we do so, we experience the greatest and the most splendid level of joy, a God-like type of joy. What a wonderful way to end this year. After going through all the minutiae of Tanis Esther, which are important, and the Torah itself gives us the same kind of spiritual joy. And the details of somebody who is a little bit spaced out in the Gilalating, that according to me it's okay, even though others disagree with me, and I explain a few reasons why. And going into the details of how one fulfills the Shalachmanas and the Matanas of Yonim, ideally in a personal way on Purim itself. And yes, how one fulfills the mitzvahs of Mishta V'Simcha, with a cup in the morning with a little bit of a nap, and with some other wine in the suda itself, which can go into the night subsequently. We conclude with this beautiful word of the Rambam, teaching us that Purim is much more than the sum of its parts, of its requisite requirements, both before, during, and even a little bit after. Rather, Purim is a time where we think that we are supposed to be giving people. The whole essence of Purim is the holiday of giving, to give to somebody else. The whole Purim is centered around these mitzvahs, especially Matanas Avyonu. The whole Purim is about the story of Klal Yisrael, that we came together when we were under the gun of Haman and Russia, and we got together, we joined together, Lech Knos as Kol Yehudim. And the Purim teaches us how we have to be so careful about our interpersonal relationships. And as a matter of fact, the Arizal said that Purim is Yom Kippurim is Yom Kippurim. In my view, it's to be explained, as some of the Bali Musa say, from this perspective, that as much as Yom Kippur is a day of unity, Purim even more so. Because Purim is a day we're unified, despite the fact that we're working, and some of us are drinking, and certainly all of us are eating, we still have to come together. This is the essence of Purim, a day of giving, a day of joy, and the two go together. The ultimate joy, the simcha gedolah mefoharet, to be godlike, to be domo neshina, is giving to someone else. May each and every one of us be worthy of this challenge of the upcoming day of Purim. And in the merit of our fulfilling this mandate properly, may we always be privileged to be givers, and may ultimately, Kadosh Baruch will bring us the geula that was already forecast at this time of Purim. The geula, which is the complete geula. The geula, which comes as a result of the miracle of Purim, the binyan beis hamikdash b'mehera b'yameinu. Amen.